A living wage for a person working full-time year-round in St. John's is $18.85 an hour. The Center for Policy Alternatives released its living wage study earlier this morning. Christine Saulnier is director with the center. She joins me live from her home in Nova Scotia. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
It seems very fundamental, but what exactly is a living wage?
So the living wage is calculated to cover all expenses and to consider really at the end of the day what a worker needs to not just cover the expenses, but what exists in the community. So it takes into account what you have to pay in terms of taxes and what you get access to in terms of income transfers. And so it is calculated to give people in a community a really locally tested, evidence-based hourly wage rate that allows people a decent quality of life. So this is not a poverty-level wage. It's to bring people above the poverty line and give them a little bit of breathing space.
How do you include all the variables? Age and work experience and renting or have a mortgage, children or not? How do you include all of those moving pieces?
So in order to calculate it, we have a reference household, and that household, it includes two adults working 35 hours a week. That's our full-time hours. And that household has two children. One requires full-time regulated childcare, and the other child is seven, so requires all of the other after-school, before-school, summer kind of childcare. It includes everything that's needed for that family. So you're looking at shelter and clothing and footwear and transportation costs, childcare, and a little bit of an emergency fund to come to the hourly wage rate. So we've put up the Excel spreadsheet so everybody can have a look at how we calculate that. It's based on the Canadian Living Wage Framework. So it's based on a methodology that's existed in Canada for just over 10 years, started in British Columbia, and there are provinces that have calculated the living wage across the country, and now we have three wage rates in the Atlantic provinces so that we can have a conversation about what the real costs are that people are facing and what the wage rate would look like.
Is it a snapshot in time, a reference to this moment of 2019? Does it include any future potential rises given cost of living increases and what have you?
Yeah, so it is done to be updated annually, ideally. So this is your hourly rate for 2019, which is based on 2018 expenses, so we can get a full year look at that. But it does include things like the Canada Child Benefit is included so that we offset some of the child care costs in there. So it does provide all of that. So it's real-time, real cost.
How do you want the communities to utilize your research, given the fact that many of the controls for adjusting wages would be in the hands of the province and or the federal government? So how do you want the smaller communities to use your info?
So this is a benchmark that for smaller communities, for our employers, for our government to actually have a look at and say, how is it that we can really bridge the gap between the wage and the cost of living? And there are many number of ways that we can do that, both on the wage side. This is absolutely a call to our private employers to have a look at what they're paying their employees, how many hours they're providing. You know, we heard a lot. What we did was actually talk to low-wage workers in focus groups in St. John's. We heard a lot about the impact that being on contract, not getting access to benefits, not knowing whether you will get enough hours in one week versus another, that's all taking a toll. So it's about the wage rate for our employers to step up, but it's also about them looking at the life of their employees and the impact that kind of precarious employment can have on that side of things. The other side is we've pointed out what an impact government programs, including public services and income transfers, have. If St. John's, if Newfoundland and Labrador had an affordable childcare program, say at $10 a day, that would actually decrease this living wage by $3 an hour. So having a conversation about how can we bridge that gap and what role can who play? So we know that the top expenses are, it's shelter for sure. Your food costs are very high. Child care is very high. But then transportation is your fourth big expense in terms of the percentage it takes in the budget. What can be done to ensure that we are addressing those costs? And sometimes it's about taking those right out of the marketplace, or somehow capping them so that families know what it is they need to pay. Sometimes it's actually investing in things like public transportation, regional transportation, making that actually affordable and accessible for people so that they don't have to own a second car, for example, depending on what's happening in their family. And it's also about really thinking about things like if you're an employer, is there a way that you can adjust work time so that somebody doesn't have to pay for after-school care? Are there other ways that we can address the cost? So, again, on the public side, we've included private health insurance, basic Blue Cross in this family budget, because we recognize that our public health care doesn't provide enough. So extending dental care so that working families get access to that, looking at a pharmacare program. The workers talked about not being able to afford medications, about making very difficult choices on that front. And I think as a community, we really need to think about what can we do to really bridge that gap? And I do think there's a lot that we can do as a community.
It's an ongoing conversation here. It generally starts with a quest to move to $15 an hour for the minimum wage. Appreciate the work you're doing, and thank you for your time this morning, Christine.
Thank you.
Christine Saulnier, director with the Center for Policy Alternatives.